What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
That's what I did. It was really funny. I walked in, and it was so strange. It looked like the person who had done it previously had never left the city of Chicago.
Leave the city of Chicago out of it.
Zero flow, no efficiency, so I thought I'd give you a hand.
I just might suggest that the both of you stop, because I don't like this at all.
Sid, it's fine. Chef Carmen uses power phrases because he's a baby replicant who's not self-actualized, which is maybe why he repeatedly referred to me as a loser.
That was The Bear picked up a load of gongs at the Emmys last night, bizarrely in the comedy category. Mario Rosenstock is with me. Mario, I can't be the only person who felt closer to a heart attack than a laugh watching The Bear.
You know what? The first time I heard the word comedy and bear was actually when your researcher called me. And that gave me a shock. And the other thing that gave me a shock is when he called me Mr. Rosenstock. So deferential. That was nice. And he said, Mr. Rosenstock, that would be very nice if you come on our program, man.
Oh, yeah. You didn't do it. Sorry. You're too good a comedian now to have done the dad joke where you said, oh, Mr. Rosenstock was my father.
Very good. No, listen, Kabir, I didn't even know. I've watched all The Bear and I enjoyed it. And but I never saw it as a comedy. I saw it as a very, very, in fact, I used to feel nervous watching The Bear because it has so much family stuff that reminds me of my own family going on that it was more like, you know, nervous wreck after watching certain episodes of Bear, particularly the Thanksgiving episode, the turkey episode, which went on for over an hour. And that really wrecked my head. So comedy? No, I didn't see it as a comedy, but it's in the comedy category. And fair enough.
Because, you know, there's a conversation that's happening today about the evolution of comedy or how it has changed on television. Yeah. You go back 20 years. So 2004, I actually went and I looked online and the shows in the comedy categories 20 years ago were Everybody Loves Raymond, Friends, Frasier, Curb Your Enthusiasm, you know, Will and Grace. Either quite obviously comedy shows or comedy shows where they had a laughing track at the back of it to really drive home the message. It's they've had their moment in the sun, it feels like.
At the moment, I think so. I've actually thought a lot about this because I kind of tend to talk to, you know, Ian and Charlie and Shauna in the mornings about this sometimes, you know, and things like this. And I mean, one of the things that's happened is, I mean, you said Friends there. And Friends is was one of these communal experiences where you watched it on television. And then you came into work next day and you shared it with other people who you know watched it on television. And that experience is diminishing because everybody is siloed into their iPad, their iPhone, and their phone and their different streaming services. So that situation doesn't happen as much anymore. Friends is still a good example because Friends is an example as well of how taste has changed and how the kind of tectonic plates of taste change really, really quickly now these days. So for example, Friends by many taste arbiters is already regarded as grimly outdated. I mean, to wit, Kathleen Turner's turn as a trans, trans drag yeah. queens, drag, you know, in that, which is, you know, held up as a really bad example of bad taste by Friends. So taste is an issue as well. Time is another one. Comedy takes time. Sitcoms take time. They take time to develop. You know, Ross Geller, or the character in Friends, isn't Ross Geller from the moment you see him. He develops.
Yeah, he's very different, yeah.
Yeah, but also characters build. They have an arc. And nowadays, people are just too damn busy to give people an arc. They just are not interested. They just want immediate gratification with stuff. Other areas that might come into it are, I said taste and time. I mean, just expense. Comedy is expensive.
Yeah.
It's really expensive. So, for example, Kevin Backhurst, who I thought made an absolutely, well, almost disgraceful comment. I won't say disgraceful, but nearly disgraceful comment last week when he was launching the RTE schedule. No, we're not going to do comedy. Comedy is hit and miss. What?
Really?
Really? Now, he actually used the expression hit and miss. And I mean, you could argue that when it comes to RTE, and, you know, I'm an offender as well. Yeah, Mario, it is hit and miss. Well, you know, I mean, that's fine. But to actually, for the head of a network to come out and go, we're not doing it because it's hit and miss. In other words, it's too hard. And also, it leads me to another point. A lot of people don't want to do comedy because of the backlash that they may receive. In 2004, you said, friends, there was no social media.
Yeah.
There was no social media worth talking about. And there was no immediate repercussions for doing something unfunny, or what some arbiters of taste described as unfunny. And some networks and some program makers are just not prepared to take the chance anymore. They'll just go, why bother? Why bother investing all this money in a character arc for a guy called Ross Geller, who isn't funny anyway, in my opinion, and then have it to be a complete miss with people? So people aren't willing to take the risk. People are worried about offense.
Yeah.
The plates of taste are changing very quickly. It's expensive. I mean, why bother investing in a sitcom when you can just throw five funny comedians onto a desk and just have them go riffing over Apple, how you're going to spend the Apple money next week?
It's funny what you're saying. You're echoing points Brendan Gleeson made on the show recently, and it wasn't in the context of comedy. He was talking about a kind of good character-driven drama being absent from the movie screens. But he said it's actually further. He says people kind of, they get excited by certain TV shows, even on the streamers. But he says actually they are too few and far between as well. And it's for one of the reasons you mentioned there. And it was that you don't get a chance because of the way they commission things now, kind of season to season to season, continually waiting on kind of instant audience feedback. That you don't get a chance to develop a character. You can't say, we're going to develop this guy over 3 or 4 seasons and it's going to go from here to here. That studio execs or whoever it happens to be, people in Netflix or whatever say, no, forget seasons 2, 3 and 4. I just need season 1. I need to know season 1 would be a hit.
Yeah. There is a difference between comedy and drama as well, because comedy, I mean, in drama you do tend to see still the investment being made. But not so much in comedy. And I think that's because of, as well, the polarization of society, the siloed nature of how we're living. Somebody's depiction of a character or somebody's depiction of a certain scene could almost, if you like, shut a show down based on outrage these days. Whereas in drama, it somehow passes through a drama is allowed to go through almost a deeper prism, where people go, no, that's drama, drama, drama. That's completely make-believe. Whereas some comedy is almost seen to be, oh no, you're trying to depict something that's close to life. Uh-huh. And you're offending the black community or the Asian community or the trans community or some community or, you know, by saying that. And somebody goes, no, I'm not doing that at all. I didn't intend to do that. But then you've lost once you're explaining. So I think comedy is touchy, dangerous, difficult to do, and liable to go wrong. And nobody wants that to happen anymore. And you're liable to lose your career over it as well. The executive producer who greenlights so-and-so comedy might be the last thing he or she ever does.
Why do it?
So why bother? And I mean, all my life as I get older, I just keep meeting people and seeing people in different professions who are crap at what they do. And I kind of made up a number and I went, about 75% of people aren't great at what they do. And about 25% are. And those 75% of people, they just want a quiet life. They just don't want the hassle. They just want to take the salary and go home. They don't need this. Mm. And it just takes the odd brave person to put their head above the parapet and go, no, I believe this is funny. I see this as being funny. I might be wrong, but I'm going to give it a shot. And those are the the Mavericks.
Yeah.
Like, why do they, why am I even describing them as Mavericks? They used to be just called comedy makers or program makers. Yeah. And now they're called content creators, and that's it. So it's a shame, but I do think that polarization has been a point as well. That idea of, I don't know if we can say that.
Yes.
I don't know if we can go there with that character.
Where that probably used to happen years ago was only in the context of maybe something legal. You know, the legal, that's kind of, you know, we might get sued for that type of thing. Whereas now it's probably, there might be kind of Twitter blowback.
True. And it's not necessarily the artist or the creator or the writer that's saying that. It is the higher echelons of executive producers who just go, I don't want to risk the hassle of Peugeot possibly ringing us and going, we might have to withdraw our car finance advertisement from that program because we didn't like your depiction of XYZ. So that's another point, actually, Kieran. Money. The influence of advertisers' money on creative. So, for example, not in comedy context, but you could almost extrapolate it out to be in a comedy context, the mass firings that happened on Fox News because the advertisers went away.
Yes.
And once the advertisers went away, Bill O'Reilly and all those guys bought the bullet. Because you can offend anybody you want, except the advertisers.
So anyway. But the advertisers going away is a symptom of a kind of a similar thing you've already talked about. There's an online blowback, isn't it? The advertisers they're just agnostic about what's being said on
that's
Fox
correct.
News.
Yeah,
but it's
that's correct.
That suddenly they open their Twitter account and they see they're trending and they realize, right. Oh no, we're trending because they're calling for us to boycott.
Exactly. So here's what I think though, and I think that comedy is too beloved and sketch comedy and character comedy is too beloved by humans for this to last for long. So I do think it's a phase we're going through, and I do think we're going through these kind of culture wars, polarization at the moment, and I do think it'll settle down a little bit. But just from the RTE point of view, I thought that was hilarious that he said hit and miss, you know, because I remember there was a stage where I was doing a comedy, I was doing a sketch show which ran for 3 seasons. Dave McSavage was doing a sketch show which ran for 3 seasons. A program called Irish Pictorial Weekly was doing a sketch show which ran for 3 seasons. And all of these shows were really enjoyed by various different people. And that's why they were on. And they were all highly rated. But they're not on anymore. And nothing like them is on anymore. You know, I understand from the money point of view. I remember standing in my knickers under fake rainfall, pretending I was Miriam O'Callaghan for about 8 hours to get one shot one day. And we shot about 10 seconds of material. And you're just kind of going, okay, that takes a long time to shoot. And I'll wipe that image from your brain as well now, Kieran.
Well, listen, some Mavericks are going to weather that storm, which brings me on to the Gift Grub Tour. Mario, it is 25 years old. Makes everybody feel old listening to a degree, but still going strong. And tickets on sale this Friday. Is that right, Mario, for the tour?
That's right, Kieran. I absolutely had no interest in coming on this program just to plug my tour.
No,
but
no.
I'm very interested in the subject matter. No. But as it happens, I am going on tour and it's on sale on Friday morning.
All right. We look forward to it. Mario, thanks a million.
You're welcome, Kieran.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.